All right, I'd like to call the Joint Committee on the Senate State Affairs and Judiciary Committees to order. Let the record reflect it's Wednesday, March 4th at 1:30 p.m. Present today are Senator Wilikowski, Senator Gray Jackson. We have Senator Stevens, Senator Tobin, Senator Keel, Senator Tilton, Senate Chair Klayman, and myself, Senate State Affairs Chair Kawasaki, and we are all present. We want to thank Juliana Singh with Senate Records for taking minutes, and Doug Bridges, the moderator with the Legislative Information Office, to keep us all connected. We just have one agenda on today's one item on today's agenda. That's a joint hearing today on the dissemination of voter information to the United States Department of Justice. Today we'll hear from Carol Beecher from the Division of Elections. We have one person online who is invited testimony from the Center for Election Innovation and Research. That's David Becker. We have our own legislative legal attorney, Andrew Dunmeyer, who's in the back, and we'll call him up soon. We will also have Rachel Witte, who is an assistant attorney general and director of legal services with the State of Alaska Department of Law. Finally, we have former Alaska Attorney General Bruce Britello, who will provide a brief statement as well. Without further ado, we're going to go ahead. There's no other comments or questions. We're going to go ahead and bring up first our own legal services attorney, Andrew Dunmeyer. In bill packets, folks have a copy of the Dunmeyer memo addressed to the Senate State Affairs Committee. It's a 14-page document basically answering a couple questions about the topics that we have today. So we want to go ahead and get started, and we're waiting for the two other folks from the administration to be online, but for now we've got Andrew here. Welcome to the Senate State Affairs Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Good afternoon. This is, excuse me, I am Andrew Dunmeyer from Ledge Legal.
Great. And I think we just wanted to sort of start with where we're at and maybe where we wanted to sort of guide this discussion. But as you've responded in this February 24th memo about the information on the voter registration records and the confidentiality, just wanted you to sort of give some initial thoughts on the law, and what you've heard from the prior discussion relating to Director Beecher's comments that she used basically Title 15, within Title 15, the rules to provide information that was confidential to an agency that's a government entity outside of the state.
To the chair, that's right. Alaska Statute 1507-195 makes a number of parts of a voter's file confidential, including age, date of birth, their social security number, any part of that, their driver's license number, their voter identification number, their place of birth, and their signature, and if they so elect, their residential address. And there's an exception in this statute that lets the state disclose confidential information to a federal agency in order to comply with federal law if the federal agency uses the information for a governmental purpose authorized under law. And currently, there are 29 states that have not given the sought-after confidential information to the Department of Justice. I just checked before I came down here, so far as I know, three of the lawsuits have been ruled on, and those are addressed in the memo. They are cases in California, Oregon, and Michigan, and I think there are 26 current lawsuits that are pending that we're waiting a decision on to see how those judges rule.
Okay. Well, I'll open it up to questions on either that issue. We, again, that's a 14-page memorandum.
A couple of questions.
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and start, Senator Klayman.
Mr. Dunmire, you made specific reference to court rulings. How did the – there are three court rulings, one Oregon, one California, Michigan. How do those three courts rule between the state – with respect to the state's position and the Department of Justice's position in those lawsuits, if you want to do it state by state?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, I guess we'll start – I think California and Oregon can be grouped together under the NVRA, where both of those courts found that – the NVRA allowed the state to withhold confidential information when it gave the voter rolls, and it didn't require the state to divulge any of the confidential information that was confidential under those states' privacy statutes. In other words, the state laws were not preempted by the federal court.
And just as a quick question, what is the confidential information that they were ruling specifically about in those cases?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, I can't remember that off the top of my head, but it's similar information to what's confidential in Alaska.
Follow up. Was it anything more? Was it driver's license, social security, and date of birth information?
It is that type, through the chair to Senator Klayman, it is that type of information, but I don't remember specifically what is confidential in each state. Then continuing under the NVRA, the Michigan court ruled a little differently, and it ruled that while the NVRA requires the disclosure of all records concerning the implementation of programs and activities related to ensuring a valid voter roll, that the actual voter roll itself did not fall under that statute. But it reached the same conclusion that the DOJ was not entitled to that information. The second argument that the DOJ made is the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, entitled it to this information. All three courts so far have ruled that HAVA does not have a disclosure provision. So in other words, the Attorney General can enforce HAVA, but there's no requirement in HAVA that the entire voter roll goes to the Attorney General in order to look for violations to enforce, if that makes sense. The third law that the DOJ cited is the Civil Rights Act of 1960. And all three courts rejected that. The analysis on this, particularly in the California court, was a little bit longer, doesn't really lend itself to a succinct summation. But in essence, the DOJ was not entitled to use the CRA to acquire the confidential information because the CRA was never intended for that purpose.
Follow up.
So the Voting Rights Act, the 1960s Voting Rights Act, was specifically focused on making sure people who had been previously prohibited from voting or otherwise excluded from voting, it was an effort to make sure that those people were allowed to vote.
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, that is correct. The Civil Rights Act of 1960 was enacted. Congress enacted it with concerns that particularly African-American voters were registering to vote and those registrations were being denied.
So did the California court look specifically at this findings that this effort by the Department of Justice was actually not an effort to make sure people that had been previously excluded from voting would be allowed to vote, but it appeared their purpose was to look for something else in the records?
Through the chair to the Senator Klayman, I think that that is an accurate statement of the California court opinion.
Okay.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am not a lawyer, although I am surrounded by lawyers at this moment, so my question might come off as a little undeveloped, but I think there is a public interest in what occurred. And from your professional opinion, is there standing for Alaskans to potentially sue the state for this action, particularly under public interest litigation statutes?
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, I think that is a good question, and that's not one that I'm prepared to answer today. I think that that is something that our office can research and get back to you on.
That would be very helpful, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 8 of the Memorandum of Understanding from the Division of Elections states, says the state agrees to remove voters deemed ineligible by the feds within 45 days. Do you believe that, and I believe you've written, but can you just talk about whether or not you believe that is authorized under Alaska law or the law or the National Voter Registration Act?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, there are that raises some issues. One of the issues is that under the NVRA, any kind of systematic voter roll cleaning has to end, I believe, 90 days before a primary or general federal election. So I believe that the next primary is in August. That would put a deadline on May of this year. Other requirements in the NVRA exist for removing voters from the roll. For example, if a voter moves out of state, Alaska can't remove them from the voter roll unless they either confirm that they moved out of state or the division goes through a process where they send a notice to the voter and the voter doesn't respond to the notice and doesn't vote in a period of time that encompasses two general elections for federal office. So it'd be at least a two-year period.
Senator Wilikowski, follow-up.
On the confidentiality of the memorandum of understanding, my office asked you for an opinion, and you wrote, and about whether or not Alaska law allows the MOU to be kept confidential. And can you talk about your opinion on whether or not that memorandum can be kept confidential?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, I think that confidentiality provision of the MOU raises questions under state and federal law. I am not aware of any exceptions to the Public Records Act that would allow the Division of Elections to keep that confidential under state law. And under federal law, under the NVRA, Section 8, which is codified at 52 USC 20507, requires that the state maintain for at least 2 years and make available for public inspection and photocopying all records concerning the implementation of programs and activities conducted for the purpose of ensuring the accuracy and currency of official lists of eligible voters. So if this MOU and the agreement between the division and the DOJ is for that purpose, then it would probably be required to be disclosed and made public under the NVRA.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
In terms of following up on Senator Tobin's question, in terms of remedies at this point for what appear to be an illegal action, and of which is causing tremendous concern among our constituents, what are the options that the legislature has to stop this action? Could the legislature file a lawsuit to prevent it? Could the legislature pass a bill prohibiting the transfer of information or removing voters based on what the division has signed on to with the MOU?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, we can, of course, draft bills for the committee or for your office that change voter maintenance requirements and statute. We could not draft a bill that prevents transfer of this data because the Alaska State Legislature does not have authority to bind a federal agency. So we couldn't pass a bill that restricts the way that DOJ uses the data. In terms of litigation, that could be a possibility. I know a former attorney general testified in the House committee about potential strategy for litigation, and that's something that this committee could consider.
Go ahead, Senator Wilikowski.
Just on the Division of Elections has stated apparently that they intend or they will be, if they go through with this action, they would be, upon the Fred's request, be removing voters from the list and then placing them on the inactive list. But I believe, and I think you've also written in your opinion, that there's no legal way to move a voter to inactive status without following the procedures in AS 1507, 130 A and B. Is that what you wrote? Is that accurate? Is that an accurate statement? And do you believe that the division would have the authority to place someone on inactive status under current Alaska law?
Through the chair to the Senator Wilikowski, that is correct. Alaska statute 1507-130 prescribes the procedure for putting voters into inactive status, and the division could not disregard that law because of an agreement that they have with the federal agency. They still have to follow 1507-130.
And just to be clear, their proposal to do so under this MOU would violate Alaska law.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I struggle to really understand what the MOU is directing the division to do sometimes. But I do agree that putting a voter into inactive status, not following the procedures in 1507-130, would be a violation of Alaska law.
All right, thank you. Senator Keel?
Well, I think the Senate President is ahead of me in line.
Senator Stevens.
Well, actually, I was going to yield to you, Senator Keel, but I will say Senator Wilikowski's question, I think, is key. I mean, we are in a different position than the three states you mentioned, California, Oregon, and Michigan, I believe. They all refuse to send the information. I believe that's true. And are taking actions to not send it. We've in the unfortunate position of we've already sent the information. And how do we, is there any way to get it back? I mean, can we ask for it to be returned? Is there some, you know, we're sort of in a tough spot, I think, than tougher spot than most states.
Through the chair to Senator Stevens, I agree. As I mentioned before, there are 29 lawsuits currently that the DOJ is engaging in against different states, and all of them involve states that declined to send this data. I think it might defer to people who have more experience litigating in federal court as to whether a lawsuit could be filed and remedies could be sought that put some, that kind of take back this action.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very kind of you. Mr. Dunmire, I'd like to pull back to maybe ask you for a little bit broader take on something. One of the reasons that I am hearing so much from so many of my constituents concerned about this is that Alaska's Constitution has an explicit right to privacy in it. It was amended in, approved by the voters in, I think, 1972, if the notes are right. And Uncle Sam took the unusual step of following Alaska's lead with the Federal Privacy Act, which is not constitutional, but it's federal law, in 1974. And I will opine, not a legal opinion, Alaskans meant it. They meant for their information to remain private. Can you talk to us a little bit about the interaction of Alaska's constitutional right to privacy and the Federal Privacy Act and some of the legal authorities cited in this memo? And in this transfer of Alaskans' private personal identifiable data?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, I think that this does raise issues under the state right to privacy. The Federal Privacy Act, as you mentioned, I think was passed in the early 70s, and the California court discussed that act. The other two courts didn't reach it, but one of the prohibitions in the Federal Privacy Act is that federal agencies cannot maintain a record describing how any individual exercises rights guaranteed by the First Amendment. And there are some exceptions to that. For example, law enforcement activity, or if they're expressly authorized by statute to maintain that kind of list. And the California court found that the U.S. Department of Justice violated the Privacy Act by asking for this information. And as I mentioned, the other two courts did not reach that question.
So just to follow up, would I be way off base if I believed that giving Alaskans private information to the federal agency so it could violate federal privacy laws runs afoul of Alaska's right to privacy?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, I don't think you're off base.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Klayman.
So I just want to turn back to Section 8 of this Memorandum of Understanding that was signed by the state with the Department of Justice. Again, in Section 8, the second paragraph has a sense that you'll agree that within 45 days after receiving notice from the Justice Department about any issues, that the state will clean its data and remove ineligible voters. And one reading that would suggest that the state just has to remove anyone the feds say needs to be removed. And my question is, if the state got a list from the federal government saying these 100 people should be removed from your voter rolls, does this agreement obligate the state to remove those folks from the voter rolls even if state law says we should not? Or would our Division of Elections need to defer to state law and not do whatever the Department of Justice says?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, the Division of Elections will still need to follow state law. There's no provision in law that lets the administration or the director of the division enter an agreement that would then require them to violate state law.
Follow up.
So this, by signing this agreement, the state is not agreeing to follow direction from the federal government. The state is, at least within the framework of this agreement, is maintaining its autonomy to make its own decision about whether or not someone is improperly on the rolls or not improperly on the rolls.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I think that might be a question better addressed to Carol Beecher or to the Lieutenant Governor. I would just say that it would still be illegal to violate Title 15, even if the Memorandum of Understanding requires someone to violate Title 15.
Thank you. Great, thank you. We do now have Carol Beecher and Rachel Witte from the administration. Are there any further questions for Andrew Dunmire while he's sitting right in front of us?
Just one more.
Yeah, Senator Wilkowski.
On that point from Senator Klayman, could the state pass a bill saying something to the effect of the Division of Elections shall not, basically addressing Section 8 and saying something like, will not remove voters from the voter rolls based on any Department of Justice recommendations or something to that effect?
Through the chair of the Senator Wilkowski, yes, we can draft a bill for you that accomplishes that.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yep. Senator Stevens.
A simple question on the Constitution. It seems like our U.S. Constitution seems to imply that elections law comes first from the states and then from Congress. But is there any mention in the Constitution that the executive branch is a part of that?
Through the chair to Senator Stevens, the time, place, and manner clause of the U.S. Constitution generally gives the duty to administer elections to the states. There is congressional oversight, and the main ways that we see that are in the NVRA and HABA.
But not the executive branch.
I think that is accurate. I agree with that.
Yeah, Senator Klayman.
Just a follow-up on Senator Stevens' question. Under the federal constitution provisions, is the federal Congress's authority to provide oversight and federal government oversight of state elections, is that limited to congressional U.S. Congress and U.S. Senate elections, or does that provision in the Constitution that actually only references Congress and the Senate, does that give the federal government oversight authority over every other feature of state elections that doesn't involve electing people to the U.S. Congress?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, that is a general requirement for elections to federal office.
Follow up?
Yep, follow
up. So that, for example, the elections that for all of us that are sitting here at the table, there is no federal authority to inspect those elections. It's only as it affects our U.S. senator and our senators and our U.S. House representative.
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, that is a generally accurate statement.
Any final questions, and we'll let Andrew sit down briefly because we'll probably ask for him to come back at some point. We'll go ahead and move on now that Director Beecher is online. We have Director Beecher, the director of the Division of Elections. She is with Rachel Witte, who is the director of the Civil Division from the Department of Law with the state. Wanted to welcome you. It says that you're listed here for questions only, so I guess we'd just get right into the questions and answers section if you like, Director Beecher.
Good afternoon. For the record, this is Carol Beecher, Division of Elections Director, and yes, that would be fine, Senator Kawasaki.
Great. Thank you, Director Beecher. There are some questions that were directed to Mr. Dunmeyer from Legal Services, but I think that they were more accurately posed to you. Senator Wilkowski, did you want to ask your questions to the director?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Beecher, thank you for calling in on this. Section 8 of the Memorandum of Understanding says the state agrees to remove voters deemed ineligible by the feds within 45 days. Our legislative attorney has confirmed that this is not authorized by Alaska law or the National Voter Registration Act. Could you describe how the division will be handling any requests to remove voters?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. So the division, under the speaking specifically to the MOU, it says in Section 8 that the removal would be pursuant to the NVRA and HAVA laws, and that they would bring forward this list to the division of ineligible voters based on their analysis of this. But the MOU also has a severability clause that if they were to ask on Section 12 on page 8B, that it is not intended to conflict with current law or regulations or directives of the department or your state, and that if it is inconsistent with such authority, that term shall be invalid. So our interpretation of this is that, first of all, it's really important to understand that while the DOJ has the voter list, they do not have access to our system. They cannot remove anybody from our system. They can only contact us and say, these voters we think should be removed. It still remains the purview and the decision of the division on whether or not we agree with them in accordance to what our laws say. So while they say that you have the 45 days, it's within that context of that we would have to agree that, first of all, these were actually ineligible voters, and secondly, that it complied with the state law and NVRA and HAVA.
So follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So Legislative Legal has also advised that there's no legal way to remove a voter remove a voter to the inactive list without following the procedures in AS 1507, 130 A and B. Is that still your understanding?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, yes. Our understanding is that this memo, the MOU, says that the state has the right to and the responsibility to follow our laws, and we would not, we will not remove somebody from active to inactive unless it is determined from the information provided that they meet the criteria and for being removed, and that we would follow then the process allowed under our state law and the NVRA and HAVA.
A follow-up.
So just to give a specific example, under if someone is registered to vote in another state under existing Alaska law, they cannot be removed from voter rolls, which is kind of crazy, but that is existing Alaska law. We have a bill to change that, but that has not passed the body. It is in the House right now, passed the Senate. If you encounter a situation like that, what would you do in that scenario? Being that Alaska law, as it exists, does not allow you to remove that voter from the rolls.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, we would likely confer with the Department of Law to see what our available remedies were for that.
Go ahead. Senator Wilikowski.
I'm trying to phrase this as diplomatically as possible, but that would be the same Department of Law that advised you that you could turn over this information to the federal government in violation of state and federal law.
I think that is a question.
More of a statement.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we can't speak to the advice that we get from the Department of Law, but we do confer with them.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Beecher, this is a little bit of a different question. And I'm just curious, as I read this memorandum, that it says in the very first line under Section 2, Alaska's agreed to and will. Can you tell us if you intend to continue submitting updated voter information to the federal agency, and if you plan to submit after, let's say, the PFD filing deadline as voter information is updated by Alaskans?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, our read of the MOU is that it was for a specific time, for the one time with the list, that this is not an ongoing MOU that will require us to continually submit lists, except in the instance where they've asked that we submit the list, were we to concur with the names or that they provide as listed for any of those reasons under 8. And again, that comport with our state law for removal or any kind of a change.
Follow up, Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize, Ms. Beecher. I didn't understand the tail end of your response pertaining to Section 8. You intend to engage with the Justice Department in. Can you just rephrase that? I apologize. I did not understand.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Tobin, I'm referring to the line that says that we would resubmit the updated voter roll data should we determine within the division that their list that they may or may not provide is in line with state law for removal to ineligibility. And each situation could be very different. So we would have to determine based on what they provided us. And again, referring continually to the state law and whether or not the request from the Department of Justice is in line with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what I'm hearing you say is that if the Department of Justice came back and indicated that they had ineligible voters that they would like you to consider, you would then resubmit an updated list to them that could potentially include new voter data as well as the data that the Department of Justice indicated was inaccurate, even after you have been clearly it has been clearly identified that this is an illegal practice.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, what I'm saying is that the Department of Justice, through this MOU, has said that they will look at the voter list that we provided, which was the active voter list, and they will analyze it to see if there are any maintenance issues, insufficiencies, inadequacies, deficiencies, anomalies, or concerns, and that they will then bring those to us, and then if it's determined that these individuals were ineligible, that they would be then removed from active to inactive. But again, that determination and that action is within the powers and the responsibility and control of the division. And so we wouldn't move anybody anywhere. We would analyze the data that they provided to see if it was in line with state law, with the federal law, NBRA, and HAVA law. So that is how the division would proceed with whatever list we got. And so an updated list would only be of the current list sent, and this is in the context of should we agree. That would be the list that would be updated with the removal should that potentiality occur.
Okay, thanks, Director Beecher. We might put something in writing based on that. I did have so before we go on to Senator Keel, Senator Klayman.
On those questions.
Okay, before I follow up with Senator Klayman, just a really quick question. Okay, well, Senator Klayman, if you have a question to follow up, go ahead.
I wanted to specifically follow up with the director in connection with the Senator Tobin's questions. How many people are on the voter roll from Alaska that was given to the federal government?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, it was the entire voter list, so the active voters. So I'm estimating around 550,000.
So let's say from the 550,000, you get some kind of communication with the Department of Justice saying there are 100 of those people they have concerns about. Do I understand your testimony that when you send information back to Department of Justice after you've run those 100 people through Alaska's statutes, you'll only be updating as to those 100 people, or will you be resubmitting the full list of 550,000?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to that would be something that we would have to discuss. I'm not sure at this juncture whether we would send the entire list again or if we would only send a list of those that we determined were ineligible. So that would be something we'd have to discuss and circle back to you on.
Is the Attorney General working on this available to answer the question for me?
Chair Klayman, this is Rachel Witte, the Civil Division Director at the Department of Law. The language that I think that Senator Tobin and you are focusing on is what is meant by verify in Section 8 of the agreement. And I think we would look at the, you know, if one name was identified, I think for each instance we would evaluate and make a determination of what makes sense under the circumstance. I think we envision communication with the Department of Justice under these circumstances too. And so I think we would evaluate based on what the irregularity is that they identify and then what action we take.
So I'm hearing kind of two inconsistent answers from you and the director. And the inconsistency is that I specifically understand that this was a one-time release of a list that's raising privacy concerns, I think, across the state. But I hear testimony that the list would only be released once. And I'm troubled that if they find one person on the voter roll that is inaccurate, that gives the basis for the department to send an entire second version of the list that may have newer data, as opposed to just respond to the one person that they've raised questions about. And I'm troubled if the department or the division would be considering that as a basis to resubmit a completely updated list 3 months after the first list was provided. What would be the basis for giving them an entire new list?
Chair Clayman, Rachel Woody from the Department of Law. I think you've identified perhaps an ambiguity in the MOU. If you look at Section 2 of the MOU, where it talks about the term VRL or VRL slash data, they use that as an abbreviated way of referring to the state's complete voter registration list, and then they use that term again in Section 8. However, if we are submitting data to verify that the action was taken that was required, it could perhaps be verified in a way that doesn't require submitting the entire list. So I think I would go back to the answer that Director Beecher gave, that we'll take a look at this and we can provide a response after we take a harder look at that.
So hopefully the last question, and then I'll defer to whoever the chair is calling on next, but there was an earlier question about if we pass legislation in this legislature passed legislation that specifically said Division of Elections shall not give voter information to the federal government that includes critical privacy information, including driver's license information, dates of birth, social security numbers. If we pass legislation that specifically prohibited this kind of disclosure, would that limit your authority to send another list related to this agreement? I'm not asking about the first list, but I'm asking about if this suggested that there was some duty to provide a second list, could we basically say, no, you can't do that? And if we can do that, do you have confidence that the division would follow the action of the legislature or follow the legislation we pass?
Chair Clayman, if I understand your question, you're asking if you passed a statute that very specifically directed the division not to comply with this term in the MOU. I think it would depend on what that legislation said. I would just identify the issue of like an impairment of contract that is a qualifier on the legislature's ability to pass legislation if it impairs an existing contract. But I think it might depend on the existing disclosure statute and any conflicting obligations under 1507-195.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wait, we've got a line. I'm going to go through the line, but I didn't have a chance to ask my question. This is going to be for Director Beecher. This has to do just way, way back. We sort of got caught up on what the VRL is, the voter registration list slash data. This agreement and this authority in page 1, line 3 and 4 of the bill says, I'm sorry, of the MOU that was signed says that you'll release the following information. The VRL slash data must include, among other fields, the voter's registrant's full name, date of birth, residential address, his or her state's driver's license number, and the last four digit of the registrant's social security number, and then it goes as required. What can you tell me exactly what data was released in that voter registration list file that went to the division or the Department of Justice?
Through the chair, Chair Kawasaki, this is Carol Beecher, Division of Elections, for the record. Yes, and let me start with what is already on the public list that individuals can purchase. The public list allows us to, or has, the party, the district or precinct, the last name, first name in the middle, name and any suffix, the accession number, the registration date, the origination date, the district date, the residence address, city, zip code, the mailing address, city and zip code, the gender, and the voter history. Those are all included in the public list. The extra things on the list that we provided to the feds, to the DOJ, was the condition date, which is the most recent change in a condition, their private residence address, if that was marked as private, the condition code, the date of birth, the last four of the social security number, and if we did not have the social security number, then we provided the Alaska driver's license number. Those are the things that we provided that were not on the public list.
Thank you. And those were the only items that were part of this data set that went to the Department of Justice?
Through the chair, it's Senator Kawasaki. Initially, the division provided the public list, and then on the second request, we provided the confidential list, and those extra things were what were included in that.
Okay, thank you. Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's along a comparable line to Senator Tobin and Klayman's questions about updating or re-providing this information over and over again. I note either to Director Beecher at Elections or Director Whitty at the Civil Division of Law that the MOU specifically says that the Department of Justice is going to use a specific federal law to govern this information. And it's 5 U.S.C. Section 522. So I read that. And among the things it requires of the Department of Justice, now that they've got the list, is they have to maintain it. They have to maintain it with such accuracy, relevance, timeliness, and completeness as is reasonably necessary to assure fairness to an individual in a determination. So right, we know the purpose of them getting the list is to make determinations about individuals, because that's what the MOU says, and that's what you've said in the conversation here. So is there any situation in which you can foresee the Department of Justice fulfilling its purposes here and following federal law and not asking us for this information over and over again?
Through the chair, Carol Beecher from the division, Senator Keel. So if I'm understanding your question right, you want to know whether or not the MOU would be requiring us to continually provide new lists to the federal government, to the DOJ. And my understanding of the MOU is that we sent the list for this one time, and that should it be updated with all of the guardrails that referred to earlier, should it be updated, we have the list that we provided to them. We would send that list updated with whatever has been determined to be updated. So it wouldn't have to be a new list. It could be the list that we initially sent to Senator Tobin's point about that the list is a living document with changes continually happening to it. We understand it to be the list that we provided initially.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With great respect, once the Department of Justice has records on every Alaska voter with our personal identifiable information and our voting behavior, the law referenced in the memorandum that the division has bound the Department of Justice to follow requires them to maintain it, keep it accurate, keep it timely, keep it updated. So with great respect, I don't think that's what you signed. Mr. Chairman, I have a question then along a slightly different tack. The next question is about controlling the further spread of our information, of Alaskans' personal identifiers, which state law and the Alaska Constitution requires us to keep confidential, because now that the U.S. Department of Justice has them and is, as mentioned, bound to follow that 5 U.S.C. 522, 5 U.S.C. 522 talks about how they share it, not how we share it, but how they share it now that they have it. And one of the provisions in there allows them to share that with lots of other federal agencies. The one that maybe concerns me the most is that they got to give it to either House of Congress, to any congressional committee, any congressional subcommittee, joint committee, or subcommittee of a joint committee, basically anything Congress throws together, Mr. Chairman. And so I guess to the director or actually to either director, whoever wants to field it, How do we keep Alaskan voters' personal identifiable information from going to the next version of Benny Thompson's committee investigating the January 6th riot?
Director Beecher or Director Witte?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I think the MOU, the DOJ through the MOU has promised to adhere to all federal requirements under the Privacy Act and the other authorities that are contained there. And so I think we're presuming that they'll comply. And if, you know, an instance comes to our attention that shows there might be a breach, we would have to evaluate that and take action based on the facts of that instance.
Mr. Chairman, just
follow up.
Let me say that back in my own words. You can correct me if I've misunderstood. You do expect all of this information to be shared with Congress then, if they ever ask for it?
The chair, Senator Keel, I didn't mean to say that with my answer. No, we presume that they're going to safeguard the information under the MOU and use it for the purpose that they stated in the MOU, which is their enforcement provisions under the NVRA. And so that puts some sideboards on the use for which they can share the information.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm just a little bit confused because the MOU, I think it's on page 7, specifically says that the Department of Justice shall be required to comply with the requirements of the Privacy Act of 1974 as amended pursuant to 5 U.S.C. section 522. It says A sub M, so maybe I've misunderstood this. I should grab A sub M. Director Witte, you don't happen to remember what A sub M does precisely, do you?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, no, I don't have it right in front of me. I can try and pull it up.
Okay, I was reading A sub B, so that could be that I have misunderstood it, which would be great. But under the Privacy Act, they are required to share it with Congress. Is there a provision here in this MOU that I'm missing that limits them to and permits the Department of Justice not to follow the rest of the Privacy Act, but only to use it for the purposes listed in the MOU?
The chair, Senator Keel, could you restate the question? I apologize. I was reading the provision at the same time.
Sure. So I appreciate the chair's leeway here. A sub M is about government contractors. That's fair. So the question then is, what in the MOU holds the Department of Justice to using and sharing this information only for the purposes in the MOU and not in other ways, not sharing it in other ways that they're required to do under the Federal Privacy Act?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the provision that I'm looking at, M sub 1, is referring to government contractors. Are we looking at the same provision?
Yes, and I appreciate the opportunity to clarify that. So then if the Department of Justice gets a request from a congressional committee for all the personal identifiable voter information they've gotten from any state that answered the Department of Justice's call, I believe it's 522A B9 requires them to give it to Congress. What in the MOU stops them from doing that?
Again, through the chair, Senator Keel, Rachel Witte from the Department of Law. I think that the purpose of the MOU is a restraint on it. I don't know that it would stop, but if Congress requested the information in order to somehow enforce the NVRA, the purpose of the MOU is the exchange of this information to further the DOJ's enforcement powers under the NVRA. And so I think that's the limitation that we view is placed on DOJ's use.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll just point the Civil Division Director to MOU Section 12E. Nothing in this MOU is intended or should be construed to limit or affect the duties, responsibilities, and rights of the user agency. That's I believe, the Department of Justice. So I think they get to share it.
Thank you, Senator Akil. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Director Beecher. You received the request for information from the Department of Justice on July 2nd, 2025 for voter information. My office called the Lieutenant Governor's office on July 16th, 2025 to ask how the department planned to respond to the Fed's request for data. We were informed on that day that the Division of Elections was still working on a formal response, but that the Department of Law in July 2025 had advised that they could only share non-confidential data. On August 4th, 2025, the Division, with Chief Assistant Attorney General Thomas Flynn from the Department of Law copied, responded to the Feds providing only non-confidential data. You said, in fact, you were providing, quote, a copy of the publicly available statewide voter registration list. What happened between August 4th, 2025, when you were advised by the Department of Law, and December 19th, when you changed your position and then provided confidential information? What changed between that time period to cause you to provide confidential Alaskan information?
For the record, Carol Beecher, Division of Elections, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. What happened between August 14th and the final signing of the MOU was a lot of discussions and analysis of whether the division could release what we could release in regards to the information that was provided.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Did the Department of Law initially provide you with a legal opinion or legal advice that you could only provide non-confidential data or non-confidential data to the Department of Justice?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I'm not sure that I can reveal advice provided by the Department of Law. Mm-hmm.
Did you? You could reveal it. They can't. You can. There's an attorney-client privilege. That flows with the attorney. The attorney can't, but you can. And I'm asking you directly, were you advised by the Department of Justice to only turn over non-confidential data?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I am not going to... You waive the privilege, but I will ask that you can ask the Department of Law, who are here, to respond to that question.
Okay, Senator Wilikowski.
I'll ask the Department of Law. What changed between August 4th, when you initially provided the Department, the Division of Elections, that they could only share non-confidential data, and December 19th? What happened between that time period that changed your caused you to change your position and advise the division to turn over Alaskans' confidential information?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, Rachel Woody from the Department of Law. The timeline, I think, was evolving, and there were a number of events taking place. We got the initial request on July 2nd. And the division reviewed it, and throughout this process, I just want to emphasize, you know, we want to cooperate with our federal partners, but we also want to be careful because we understand that this is sensitive data. The division feels pretty good about its voter rolls and knows that it retains control over them. And so, you know, we kept those things in the foreground as we proceeded. The division did respond with the public voter list because that seems like the least the least invasive on anyone's privacy under a balancing test. And when the DOJ wrote back and said they wanted the full list, then we looked to see whether we were authorized under state law to provide it, and whether the feds had the authorization to access that information under their enforcement provisions under the NVRA. And throughout that time period, we worked with the Department of Justice. We received an MOU to provide some additional protections and clarification about the purpose for the request and how they were going to safeguard the information. And so we received the MOU. We did suggest some edits to the MOU and were made to understand that this was a standard MOU that was being provided to all the states. And so about that time, we were into December of 2025, and by the time we did sign the MOU and return it, 20 states had been sued, and we did understand that we were going to be sued, but we wanted to cooperate with our federal partner and provide this information that they were entitled to under state and federal law.
Senator Witkowski.
Is this a new position by the Department of Law and the administration to not engage in conflict with the federal government? You filed 53 lawsuits against the federal government. There's 53 active lawsuits against the federal government as of 2024. You've never been shy about filing lawsuits against the federal government when there have been tremendous encroachments on Alaska's sovereignty. And here you have attorneys in West Virginia who are saying, quote, the federal government is not going to get any personal information on West Virginia voters. You've got Utah saying, Utahns can be assured that my office will always follow the Constitution and law, protect voters' rights, administer free and fair elections. That's a Republican lieutenant governor. The prior statement was a Republican and former chair of the West Virginia GOP of West Virginia. And then Kentucky Secretary of State pushing back and saying, I will not voluntarily commit a data breach by providing Kentuckians' personal data to the federal bureaucracy unless a court order tells me to. Why on earth, when you have 53 active lawsuits against the federal government, did you not stand up for Alaskan sovereignty and Alaskans' privacy and Alaska's right to keep their information confidential? Why did you not stand up to the federal government in this case?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I think in each of these instances, I don't know the 53 cases that you're speaking to, but in each instance, we evaluate a request from an agency for cooperation, and we look to see whether it's authorized under law. In this case, we have a mutual interest in maintaining our voter list and in election integrity. We thought the interests were aligned. We looked at our statute, AS 1507-195, which provided the authority to share this information with the DOJ to enforce the NVRA and maintain accurate and current voter lists. And so the determination was made to cooperate.
Senator Witkowski.
And I guess I'll just say I don't know what the state law is in West Virginia or in Utah and whether those permitted the same disclosure, but in our case we had to look at Alaska law, and that was how the determination was made in our case.
Go ahead, Senator Witkowski.
Ms. Witte, you testified a few minutes ago that there was a, quote, impairment of contract issue if the MOU was violated. And that struck me. I'm curious if it's your understanding that this is some sort of contract that the state of Alaska entered into. And if so, what is the consideration? What did the state of Alaska get out of this contract? Because a contract requires offer, acceptance, and consideration. And that consideration means both sides get something out of it. And I'm curious if you think it's a contract, number one. And if so, what does Alaska get out of this contract?
To the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'll say that the question about whether or not the legislature could pass a law that specifically directed the Division of Elections not to comply with the terms of this agreement, that was a new issue, and we could look into it more. I just raised that there would be a potential constraint, but the legislature can't can't pass laws that are specifically directed to impair an agreement if this agreement there would be an analysis that would have to take place there. So I was just raising that as an issue.
So I did want to recognize that Senator Bjorkman joined us some time ago. We do have another speaker whom we haven't yet reached, and I'd really like to take that speaker on. But if there's any questions, and they'll be online for questions still. So if there's no questions, we're going to go ahead and hop on to Mr. Becker. David Becker is joining us via Teams. He's with the Center for Election Innovation and Research. And we can see you.
Excellent. I hope the internet connection stays steady. If not, I'm ready to dial in on the phone. But hopefully you can all hear me. I'm David Becker, Executive Director and Founder of the Nonpartisan Nonprofit Center for Election Innovation and Research. I personally worked in elections for nearly 30 years, including 7 years serving as a trial attorney with the United States Department of Justice's voting section under 3 attorneys general, 2 Republican, 1 Democratic. As you know, over the past year, the DOJ has embarked on an unprecedented attempt to seize sensitive voter data on every single American voter. Through requests, pressure campaigns, and lawsuits, the DOJ has demanded states relinquish that sensitive data, including Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, and dates of birth, often in violation of their own state laws. Why does the DOJ want this data? What will they do with it? And how will they protect it? The DOJ doesn't really say and offers contradictory explanations when they do try to say something. But we do know this. Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution states that the time, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time, by law, make or alter such regulations. In other words, election policy is made in the states first, and then by Congress, but never by the executive branch. There is no congressional authorization that can justify the DOJ's attempt to collect this data for any purpose. Even the DOJ seems to acknowledge this, as their legal justifications keep evolving. The DOJ initially claimed that the National Voter Registration Act and Help America Vote Act required the states to hand over sensitive information on their voters. A simple review of these laws demonstrates that not only do they not grant the federal government the power to seize this data, but these laws expressly recognize that the states have the sole authority to conduct voter list maintenance. The DOJ has also claimed that the Civil Rights Act of 1960, a law passed to prevent racial discrimination at a time long before statewide voter lists existed, required states to cede their list maintenance authority to the federal government. But regardless of the shifting rationale, the courts have made clear that the DOJ's demands exceed their authority. To date, 3 federal courts have all agreed the DOJ has no right to this sensitive data and affirmed state sovereignty over their elections. 2 of those federal courts, Oregon and California, are in the Ninth Judicial Circuit along with Alaska. And the 3rd, Michigan, was decided by a judge appointed by the current president. As one of the courts put it, the DOJ cannot go beyond the boundaries provided by Congress and use these legislative tools in a manner that wholly disregards the separation of powers provided for in the Constitution. It is Congress's role to determine the purpose and use of legislation. Should Congress want to enable the executive to centralize the private information of all Americans within the executive branch, Congress will have to clearly say so, unquote. And it's not only the federal law does not authorize the DOJ to collect this information. Courts confirm that Congress made it illegal for anyone in the federal government, including the DOJ, to amass data on American individuals in this way. In 1974, Congress passed the Privacy Act, restricting federal agencies from collecting and disseminating personal information without proper notice, purpose limitation, and safeguards. It is designed to prevent precisely what the states are now being pressured to facilitate: mass collection of personal data without clear statutory authority and without adequate guardrails. As the California District Court found, quote, the court is concerned that the very issues that animated Congress to pass the Privacy Act, threats to American democracy amidst erosion of public trust regarding the executive's use of sensitive data, will play out again if the DOJ is given license to ignore the guardrails created by Congress in the Privacy Act. Congress passed the Privacy Act to prevent the creation of formal or de facto national data banks or centralized federal information systems because of the risks posed to the privacy of individual Americans. Now the executive stands at the precipice of making Congress's fears come to life, but the Privacy Act remains a protection for the American people, unquote. Those threats to the privacy and security of Americans are very real. The data the DOJ demands, Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, and dates of birth, comprise the holy trinity of identity theft. If this data were leaked, the financial well-being of millions of Americans would be put at risk. That's why so many states have passed laws protecting this data and preventing its disclosure. and concerns about the protection of sensitive data are amplified by the federal government's handling of such data. This past year, it was revealed that the federal government uploaded confidential data to a vulnerable server and inadvertently released the full 9-digit Social Security number of New Jersey's now governor, a veteran, to her political opponent. The Brennan Center for Justice just released a report outlining the flawed data security practices used by the DOJ in these very data collection efforts. And in a recent filing in the United States District Court for Maryland, the Department of Justice disclosed that the federal government had shared sensitive voter data with what it described as, quote, a political advocacy group. House Democrats just sent a letter to the group demanding information about whether they received protected data. Think of that. Think of some outside political group with whom you might agree or disagree. And then imagine they obtain the Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, and dates of birth for many voters in your state, if not all of them. Given that it's confirmed that Alaskan sensitive data has already been sent to DOJ, that may be the reality facing Alaskans today. I've worked with election officials and Alaskans across the political spectrum. In almost every case, those officials act with integrity on behalf of their voters, regardless of partisanship. And Alaska's voters, Republicans, Democrats, independents, rural, urban, native, military, do not expect their personal information to become collateral damage in a national political battles. What would have happened if here it was a president of a different party demanding this information? Would Alaskans' data have been shipped off to D.C.? What if a future administration of a different party demands this data, perhaps to automatically register all eligible voters pursuant to that same National Voter Registration Act cited? Will Alaska have any justification to resist? State power and sovereignty over elections should not be negotiable dependent upon the party identification of the person occupying the Oval Office. The protection of our citizens and voters should not shift with the partisan whims. And if a Democrat sits in the White House and makes the same demands in future years, I will come back and say the same thing. The majority of states have recognized this. The DOJ is currently suing 29 states in D.C., including many Republican-led states. 4 of the last 5 states sued are led by Republicans. Only 11 other states are in the same boat with Alaska, having already shared confidential voter information with the DOJ. Election officials across the political spectrum stood up to protect state sovereignty and voter security, regardless of partisanship. And I think, as was previously cited, the conservative Republican Secretary of State of West Virginia has just stated, quote, my responsibility is first and foremost to the citizens of West Virginia. The DOJ doesn't have authority to run a state's elections. I support efforts to strengthen election integrity, but I will not break the law, give up our state's rights, or compromise the privacy of our citizens, unquote. Unfortunately, Alaska currently finds itself in a different position than states like West Virginia, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Utah, and many other states. While courts confirm the DOJ has exceeded its authority and allows the states to protect their citizens' data, Alaska should mitigate the risk that's already occurred. The state can do this by demanding the DOJ return its data, destroy all copies, and transparently reveal all those inside and outside government who may have had access to that data. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much for being online, Mr. Becker, and appreciated your written statement as well. We'll enter that into the public testimony. Senator Klayman has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Late in your remarks, you comment about asking for the information the rolls back. And at one level, one thinks, well, they've already got it. How can you get it back? But I'm wondering if there's any basis that we could articulate that the Attorney General could come and say, we want it back now. You've had a chance to look at it, haven't done anything with it in some period of time. Can we get it back?
Well, I think there might be several options available. I mean, I don't think the DOJ is going to give it back willingly. I've not seen the Alaska Memorandum of Understanding in particular, but I have seen a similar memorandum, and it's likely close to identical, if not identical. And one of the odd provisions in that is at one point it says it's going to destroy the data after it's done with it, and then the next line immediately below it, it says that the data is going to be archived. Those two things are very contradictory. That may be the case in the Alaska memorandum, as again, I have not seen that specific one. Look, there's always the possibility of a lawsuit against the federal government, as was just mentioned. That seems many of the states are finding themselves in quite a bit of litigation against the federal government. In an effort to retrieve what I think is reasonably considered to be the property of the people of the state of Alaska. Certainly, there may be claims that the government obtained this data under false interpretations of the law or false representations of fact. I think those are all things that should be considered. I would defer to the lawyers for the state on that issue, though.
Senator,
thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand there are some pending bills in Congress to give DOJ specific authority to collect information like this. Does the fact that those bills in Congress are seeking this authority suggest that the DOJ actually doesn't have this authority under federal law?
Yes, that's quite right. There are bills that specifically say that states must hand this data over to the DOJ, which I think, as you point out, does reflect the fact that at least Congress, particularly congressional supporters of this administration and their efforts, believe that that is not the current state of the law. So I think I can't say what the DOJ believes. They're not Congress, obviously. It does not appear that those bills are likely to pass. But I'll also say, having practiced in this area for over 30 years, or almost 30 years, having worked extensively on the National Voter Registration Act and Help America Vote Act during that time, including at the DOJ, it's frankly somewhat baffling how anyone could have interpreted those laws, given the exact language in those laws and the case law that has come out that affirms that while the DOJ can require states to have a list maintenance program, they are not entitled to conduct list maintenance on behalf of the states. The sole responsibility for conducting that list maintenance resides in the states. That is affirmed by the Help America Vote Act as well. And it's unclear how any state could have reached a different conclusion. And in fact, as I pointed out, the vast majority of states have reached the conclusion that their state laws protect that data and there's nothing in federal law that preempts that.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman.
There are other states that have released the data. Are you aware, in those other states that have released the data voluntarily and are not part of the lawsuits, whether any of those states have been sued within that state for the improper release of the data in some kind of citizen suit?
I'm not aware. There was a lawsuit in, I believe, Nebraska seeking to prevent that state from releasing the data prior to its release. And if I'm recalling correctly, that suit was in state court and it was dismissed for lack of standing under specific Nebraska state law. I think this is very much a state law question, which I'd be the first one to admit, although I've done work in Alaska in my career, I would not claim to be an Alaska qualified lawyer, so I want to be careful on that. But I will also tell you, to the degree this is relevant to the inquiry, not all of the states that have sent the data to the DOJ have signed the MOU. I know for a fact that some of the states, even those that shared the data, were uncomfortable with some of the terms of the MOU and did not sign it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, any further questions for Mr. Becker? Okay, thank you for being online. And again, we do appreciate your input and providing us with some written testimony as well. That will be part of the permanent record. We have one more person who's in the room to testify, and that's former Attorney General Bruce Botello. I was wondering if you wanted to come forward and give us a little bit of your thoughts, being a member of the former Attorney General for the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Chairman Kawasaki and Chairman Klayman and members of the committees. My name is Bruce Botello. I am a former Attorney General for the state of Alaska, and I'm here to comment on the agreement between the Alaska Division of Elections and the U.S. Department of Justice that provides the DOJ with Alaska's full voter registration files, and unfortunately also invites federal involvement in voter list maintenance. I want to compliment the committees in calling on David Becker. In my view, he is probably the nation's foremost expert in this area, and I'm pleased that he was able to offer his perspective. My own point is this. The agreement is ultra vires. That is to say, it's beyond the lawful authority of the lieutenant governor. It's inconsistent with state and federal law, and it's dangerous to Alaskans' constitutional right to privacy. Under the agreement reached in late December 2025, the state provided the DOJ with the entire panoply of information, names, birth dates, residential addresses, and so forth. In essence, information that is, except for the voter's name, confidential by state law. And then the memorandum of understanding gives the Department of Justice the power to review the rolls and demand voter removals within 45 days. Again, a power that Congress has not granted the department. The key problem is that the statutes that the Department of Justice cites do not transfer to the DOJ the state's own authority to control and purge their voter rolls. I know that you've now at least a couple times heard descriptions of these federal statutes. I'd like to go through them very briefly. We'll start with the National Voter Registration Act. It does require states to adopt list maintenance procedures and prescribes when and how states may remove voters, whether it's death, a move, criminal conviction, if state law provides, and so forth. And then we have the Help America Vote Act, HAVA, which requires states to maintain a single statewide voter registration database and coordinate it with other state records. Again, as duties of the states with list maintenance done on a regular basis, quoting from the law, in accordance with the requirements of the National Voter Registration Act. In other words, the NVRA and HAVA tell Alaska what it must do and how it must do it. They do not say that the Department of Justice may itself operate Alaska's list or order particular removals. None of the cited laws contains language authorizing the Department of Justice to decide which registrants are ineligible, to pick the method Alaska must use for removals, or to order purges at the Department of Justice's discretion. Instead, the Department of Justice's role is to ensure that Alaska's own program complies with federal standards, typically through negotiation or litigation. And on another point, the National Voter Registration Act does not, by its own terms, require states to provide their full voter rolls to the Department of Justice. As has been referred to several times here, in the last 2 months, there have been three federal courts, Oregon, California, and Michigan, which have rejected nearly identical efforts by the Department of Justice to obtain unredacted statewide voter files and control states' list maintenance processes. Each found that the federal civil rights statutes do not authorize DOJ to collect, warehouse, or direct the management of the voter rolls. And simply citing the cases doesn't go to the degree to which, if you read the individual decisions, the outrage expressed by the individual judges reviewing it. And I encourage you to do so. Legislative counsel and Mr. Becker pointed out, DOJ right now is pursuing cases in 29 states and the District of Columbia, including the five that were added last week. Yesterday, there was argument in Federal District Court in Minnesota. Judge has asked for additional briefing. There will be decisions or arguments held in four other states within the next 30 days. My guess is that we're going to see a long string of decisions that parallel those in Oregon, California, and in Michigan. In entering into this agreement, the Lieutenant Governor has effectively legislated a new federal role in Alaska's elections without either a federal mandate or state legislative approval. And that, to me, is the very definition of what an ultra-virus act is. I also take the view that it is undermining Alaska's constitutional provisions. I particularly refer to Article 1's explicit right to privacy, which prohibits, I think, unnecessary government disclosure of personal data. This was a point that the California court also made with respect to the California situation, that releasing unredacted voter files chills registration and participation, concerns that are probably at least as serious when we talk about small Alaskan communities. By committing to purge voters at DOJ's discretion, the Lieutenant Governor is bound the state of Alaska to follow federal instructions on who remains registered without legislative standards or public oversight. This shift raises fundamental separation of powers issues and compromises our sovereignty in election administration. I recognize that when this agreement was signed, no court had yet ruled against the Department of Justice's theory. But the warning signs were clear, and most states, as you've already heard, declined to cooperate. Alaska delayed months before responding to the Department of Justice's demand, and this, I think, really plays into Senator Wilkowski's line of questioning. The delay itself indicates to me that there were likely internal disagreements over the Department of Justice intrusion. How else do you explain the August 14th demand by the Department of Justice that the state turn over the data within 7 days, the division's assurance both in the hearing on Monday and yet today that it wished to cooperate fully with their federal partners, and the agreed upon language within the memorandum of understanding itself that time is of the essence against the otherwise inexplicable delivery finally 4 months later? Like David Becker, I believe that the Division of Elections consists of a very dedicated and professional staff. But in this case, I think the leadership made a grievous error. I conclude by offering these recommendations for your consideration. First, exercise robust oversight by obtaining and making public all legal analyses provided by the Department of Law. Seek attorney-client and deliberative process privilege waivers from the division and the attorney general for written exchanges between the two agencies, and obtain any communications from the Department of Justice regarding expected purges or list maintenance actions. Second, I would propose adoption of a resolution affirming the Alaska voter registration data may not be shared in unredacted form with any federal agency absent clear statutory authorization, full public process, and explicit safeguards consistent with Alaska's constitutional right to privacy and with the principles that have been articulated in the decisions from Oregon, California, and Michigan. Third, I would support or initiate litigation to achieve three objectives. First, to have the agreement declared ultra vires, thereby relieving the Lieutenant Governor from any obligation under its terms. I would second enjoin the Lieutenant Governor from removing any voters from the Alaska rolls solely at the Department of Justice's direction or pursuant to federal criteria not enacted by this legislature. And three, to clarify that any sharing of voter data or delegation of list maintenance authority must stay within the bounds of both federal and Alaska law. And responding to an earlier question by Senator Tobin to one of the other witnesses, Alaska has a very liberal standard in terms of standing of Alaskans and Alaskan voters to be able to challenge actions of their government. In this case, the injury to Alaska has been the infringement on our Constitution's provisions, the right to privacy, as well as the specific state statute, which outlines what specific voter data is confidential. I end by simply noting that Alaska's elections should be administered by Alaskans under Alaska law, consistent with narrowly drawn federal statutes, not by confidential agreements that cede our voters' personal information and our sovereign control of our roles to an agency whose legal theories have already been rejected by all courts that have considered them. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Botello. Senator Klayman?
I don't have any questions for Mr. Botello.
Any questions? We certainly do appreciate you being here, appreciate you testifying. As a former attorney general and who was in charge of the Department of Law, I just appreciate your bringing information forward to us. And go ahead. Senator Wilkowski has a question.
I am curious about your and appreciate your testimony. I am curious about your thoughts on the testimony of the Deputy Assistant General who testified that violating or the state not following the MOU at this point would be an impairment of contract. That really struck me, and I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I'm not a contract lawyer, so I'm a little hesitant to talk, but
your question as to what is the consideration that would make this a contract. And I assume it would be the view that by entering into the agreement that Alaska would be achieving or responding to its supposed duty to accurately maintain its own lists, and that in that regard it's has value both to the state as well as the federal government. That is, of course, part of why I take the agreement to be a form of contract, and why I also believe that it is a basis for bringing lawsuit to challenge and to basically have it determined to be against the law.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you once again. We've got 15 minutes left. We got a little bit of expansion of time, but we did have, I think, a question for Director Beecher and Rachel Witte with the Department of Law, if they're still online. They are. Okay, Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Yes, for Ms. Beecher, would you please provide us with copies of all of the advice that you received from the Department of Law regarding this issue?
For the record, Carol Beecher, Division of Elections, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I will be conferring with the Department of Law in regards to your request.
Well, follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Well, here's the thing why would you need to confer with the Department of Law? You have the ability to waive any potential attorney-client privilege. What do you need to speak with? This is an issue of grave concern for hundreds of thousands of Alaskans, and you have the ability to provide us with those documents. You have the ability to waive any potential privilege. Would you be willing to do that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, at this point, I am not willing to waive that privilege.
Thank you. We have a question from Senator Elvie Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see, the question is for Ms. Beecher and or the attorney, but as you can see, many of us have major and legitimate concerns regarding this matter, and many of us make mistakes, and then we fess up to our mistakes and realize we made a mistake and you know, move on. Do you think that because this is a gross mistake, that maybe you made a mistake in releasing this information to the Department of Justice? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator Jackson, I do not, at this juncture, believe that the division made a mistake in signing the MOU.
Okay. Senator Wilikowski.
So knowing what you know now, would you make the same decision and provide this confidential information to the Department of Justice and sign this MOU?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. That would be speculating on something that has already occurred. I guess I would say that I would potentially like to have had more time to, that maybe more time.
Senator Wilikowski, follow up.
The letter was first sent in July. It's now March. You've had 8 months, to consider the actions. And since this was information was turned over in December, there's been three federal lawsuits which have all concluded that actions of those states was a violation. There have been over a dozen other lawsuits, I think 20 lawsuits filed. There's been legislative legal opinions which very clearly say this is a violation of state and federal law. Knowing all of that, does that change your opinion about whether the right call was made in turning over this confidential information?
Senator Wilikowski, the Alaska statute, AF 1507-195-3C, it states that notwithstanding the other provisions and in compliance with federal law, the information made confidential by this section may be released by the division to a federal government agency. And the division was following what was permitted in state law.
Let's move on to Senator Klayman.
So this is a question for Ms. kind of a series of questions for Ms. Woody. As I understand your prior testimony, when this memorandum of agreement was signed in December, in late December of 2025, the Department of Law was very aware that there were at least 29 states in the District of Columbia that were not providing similar information that had been asked from Alaska.
Sarah Klayman, Rachel Woody from the Department of Law. We were aware that there were other lawsuits. I don't know the exact number at the time, but we were aware that there were an increasing number of other lawsuits.
Were you aware that it was a majority of the states had not been providing confidential information?
Chair Klayman, Rachel Woody from the Department of Law. I don't know majority. We knew that there were some states that were cooperating and there were some states that were not. And we think each state was probably analyzing it based on their own statute, as we did with ours. And again, there was no case law at the time. There's still no binding case law in Alaska. Our statute is very different than the statutes in Oregon, Michigan, and California. When the cases came down under those statutes, interpreting those. So, we made the decision based on Alaska law and our circumstances here.
And I hear you specifically referencing 1507-195 is the law you're looking at.
Yes, Chair Klayman. And also that statute presumes that the agency that is requesting the information also has the authority, so we look to see whether the Department of Justice has authority to request this information, and we concluded that under the NVRA enforcement provision that they do have the authority to enforce list maintenance. They're not, and again, we didn't interpret this as them taking over our list maintenance activities. The state preserves its obligations and authority to conduct its own list maintenance activities.
And we're in complete agreement that the driver's license information, dates of birth, the other information that was listed, is listed and identified as confidential under Alaska law.
Chair Klayman, yes, we agree that information under A1 of 1507-195 is confidential unless an exception applies, and we believe that under C1, because this was requested by a federal government agency and they had the authority to do it, that it is an authorized release of information under the statute.
So here's what I'm missing from your analysis. Because I've listened to you talk two or three times specifically about the Title 15 sections. I've heard the director talk two or three times about the Title 15 sections of law, and not once have I heard you say one word about the right to privacy in the Alaska Constitution. Would you agree that the Alaska Constitution is supreme to the statutes?
Chair Klayman,
That's a simple question. Is the Constitution supreme to the statutes?
Yes. So we also presume that the statute is constitutional.
So that would be the Alaska statute, but how do you then balance, how can you provide your analysis without once discussing the right to privacy of every citizen in Alaska to keep that that information confidential? I've never heard once that the right to privacy was part of your analysis. Why not?
Senator Klamath, we believe that the right to privacy was considered by the legislature in passing the statute, and under the Constitution, the right to privacy is not absolute. It's analyzed under a balancing test that weighs the individual's reasonable subjective expectation of privacy against the state's compelling interest. Here, the state had a compelling interest in complying with federal list maintenance rules, which help ensure the integrity of our elections, and that justified sending the information to the Department of Justice.
What was the compelling interest? I'm sorry, ma'am. What was the compelling interest? You can't just say it's a compelling interest. What's the compelling interest?
I'm sorry, Chair Klamath. To ensure the integrity of elections, there was a mutual interest in maintaining voter rolls that were accurate and current.
And I think my last question on this, you said the legislature in passing 1507-1995 did analysis about the right to privacy. Does that mean that the Department of Law, in its memos that it gave to the Division of Elections, never had any discussion of the right to privacy in those memorandums or the other advice you gave to the Division of Elections?
Chair Klamath, I don't know that there's been testimony today about a memorandum that was transmitted from the Department of Law to the Division of Elections. I think the Division of Elections has said that they consulted with law in making this decision, but I just want to make sure that the record is clear on that. I think. I'll ask the rest of the question.
Then I'll ask you the specific question because you're with the Department of Law. I'm not asking what's in the content of a memorandum, but were memorandums provided from the Department of Law, not even a memo, a written document of any sort, including an email from the Department of Law to the Division of Elections on these topics?
Chair Klamath, as the director of the Civil Division, I oversee the section that provides the advice. I don't know whether there were specific emails that provided advice on this topic. That I haven't reviewed all of the emails, but I don't know of any formal memorandum of advice.
And based on the information today, your current belief is that in those communications, at least to the extent you have knowledge of them, there was never any advice given to Division of Elections about the constitutional right to privacy. Is that correct?
Chair Klamath, I cannot speak to advice that was given from the Department of Law to the Division of Elections, but I was here today to try and provide the legal basis that provides a justification for the decision made by the Division of Elections.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to end here, but I did want to ask Director Beecher just one last question. In the Memorandum of Understanding, in Section 8, it talks about basically an obligation. The obligation is that within 45 days of receiving notice from Justice, you will, of any issues, insufficiencies, inadequacies, deficiencies, anomalies, concerns, your state will clean the VRL/data by removing ineligible voters and resubmit the updated VRL data. I guess you've mentioned, testified before, and also it's been reported that you will do it under the law of elections. Do you, have you received any information from the Department of Justice yet?
Chairman Kawasaki, this is Carol Beecher, Division of Elections. We have not received any directives or any other information from the Department of Justice at this time.
Okay. I will just say that obviously there's some concerns about what happens with that data, how it's utilized, what it does to the state of elections in Alaska. And there are obviously some major concerns, as we've shared. So I just wanted to make sure that the Senate Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, and the Senate and House State Affairs Committees were just looped in if there is a request from the Department of Justice. Did you receive that request?
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Kawasaki, yes, I understand.
All right. Any other questions or comments about today's meeting?
Actually, one more question.
Okay, one more question for Senator Klayman.
This is for Ms. Beach or Ms. Witte. Do you believe that under this agreement, there's a timeline within which the Department of Justice must send you a request to make adjustments or anything else that it finds with Alaska's voter rolls, or do they just have between now and eternity to get back and comment on these?
Through the chair, this is Carol Beecher, Chairman Klayman. I do not believe that there is a specific timeline for the Department of Justice to respond to us with anything that they find with our list.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, privacy is one of those things in our state constitution, and I can't remind people how frequently we fought the federal government on the real ID, on a big nationalized ID program. Alaskans are concerned about making sure that firearms privacy is somewhere in statute so that we don't allow the federal government to know about our firearms. So anyways, I just wanted to end on that note and just say that we appreciate you providing some information. We hope that you'll provide more information on how some of these decisions were made before the MOU was signed. At this time, we will adjourn the meeting of the Senate State Affairs and Joint Judiciary Committee. I just wanted to remind folks in Senate State Affairs that the Senate Bill 203 on prohibited weapons/firearm conversion devices by Senator Tobin, Senate Bill 243, prohibited weapons/silencers by myself and Senator Tilton will also be heard. And Senate Bill 126, correctional facilities placement by Senator Yount will be heard tomorrow at the regularly scheduled 3:30 p.m. meeting. Without any further business, we're going to go ahead and adjourn. Let the record reflect that it is 3:18 p.m.